Welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for listening. Well, it was 79 years ago tomorrow when terror took over Germany. That was the night of Kristallnacht, also known as Night of Broken Glass. It was a pogrom against the Jews of Germany. Over a period of just a couple of days, almost 100 people were murdered. Over 1,000 synagogues were burned. That violence escalated in the following years as Hitler and the Nazis tried to eradicate the Jews from Germany. Herbert Karliner was 13. His family's grocery store was destroyed during the Kristallnacht. His family was forced to leave. And they were on the MS St. Louis that arrived in Cuba before being turned away and then had to return to Europe. And we're joined now by Mr. Karliner and also by Cheryl Ojeyon. She is the head of Echoes and Reflections, teaches teachers how to teach the Holocaust, part of the program Yad Vashem. Cheryl, I hope I said that right.
You did great.
All right. I practiced. I tried. Mr. Karliner, it is such an honor and a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking the time to be here today.
It was a pleasure to be here.
I also want to mention, by the way, that both of you are going to be speaking at a special event tomorrow in remembrance of the day. It's called Kristallnacht, the spark that ignited the Holocaust. It's Thursday, November 9th. It starts at 6 p.m. at the Holocaust Memorial, Miami Beach. I'll mention that again a little later in the program so that you can get that information down. Herbert, tell me, where in Germany were you living at the time?
I was living in South Silesia, out eastern part of Germany, close to the Polish border. And actually, only 12 kilometers of Auschwitz.
12 kilometers from Auschwitz.
A little bit more than that.
Tell me a little bit about that neighborhood. Before everything happened, what was that neighborhood like, community?
It was a small town we lived in. My father had a store, grocery store, and we did very well. We had a family of four, two girls, two boys. And my father usually went down to the store on 7 in the morning. And our home was in the front, was the store for the selling people.
The family owned a grocery store.
Yeah.
You lived back of the store.
Right.
Okay.
And he went down to the store, and all of a sudden he came out and screaming, somebody broke in the store. So we all ran downstairs, and I couldn't believe what I saw. All this grocery on the floor and the big window broken. We had a ledger for the store, for the people. The people came and bought the farmers, bought the stuff without paying, and they were supposed to bring it back in the summer when they had money.
What was it? I mean, so your father had gone down to the store. I mean, did you hear what was going on outside?
Yeah.
And so he comes back screaming. Did you go into the store? You see what happened?
Yeah, we couldn't go in the store because everything was upside down. So we went on the side store, and the SR, the brown shirt, were in front of it and laughing and so on.
The brown shirts, those were
the SR.
Okay.
Yeah.
Again, that's a group, a Hitler group.
Right. The stormtroopers.
The stormtroopers, mm-hmm. Yes. They were outside the store, right. And they were laughing as the store was being destroyed.
And they told us to clean the sidewalk. It was full of glass. And then somebody came and told us the synagogue is burning. So my father and myself went to the synagogue, and sure enough, they had a bonfire. They threw the prayer books and the Torah in this fire. And my father was trying to retrieve it, but they kicked him and we couldn't make it. Then somebody came back and told us the Gestapo wants to pick up all the families. So we went back home and we didn't know what to do. And we waited, and we had to, meantime, close the window.
You had to close the window.
Yeah.
That's okay. All right. You know what, Cheryl? This happened over a period of just a couple of days.
Correct.
And again, as I mentioned in the intro, thousands were arrested. Real briefly, in the history of this particular story, of the Kristallnacht, this was something that was planned out and well organized, because it happened over a couple of nights. And then, of course, police and law officials were basically told, turn and look the other way.
That's absolutely right. What was happening in Nazi Germany up until that time, and remember that we're in 1938. Hitler came to power in January 1933 and started to pass laws against the Jews that marginalized them from society. So they were being pushed out. They were being isolated. Jews couldn't be lawyers. They couldn't be doctors. They couldn't sit on public park benches. They couldn't go to public schools. Once you get to 1938, though, by the time you get to 1938, and let me just mention one more thing, 1935, the Nuremberg Laws actually made the Jews, they took away the citizenship from the Jews. So Jews who had lived in Germany for hundreds of years, whose families had been there, who had fought in World War I on the side of Germany, they were patriots, they were no longer German citizens. And so you have this move to take the Jews out of German society. But by the time we get to 1938, Kristallnacht was the turning point, because that is the night that everything becomes violent. And not only that, it's the night you mentioned all the people who were arrested. 30,000 men were arrested over the course of a couple of days and sent to concentration camps. Before that night, Jewish people had not been arrested because they were Jewish. They had been arrested if they were political opponents of Hitler. And on that night, 30,000 men are arrested for no reason other than the fact that they were Jewish. So there was a whole shift. It's like a real milestone.
Yeah. Mr. Karliner, how long was it before you and your family decided you had to get out?
Well, we wanted to, before even the Christmas night, we had quota to come to the States. But we had to wait for many years to get the number of the quota. And when the Kristallnacht came, we didn't know what to do. My father, well, first of all, the Gestapo came and said to pick up the whole family. They picked up only my father and took her to prison.
They took your father to prison?
Right.
Okay.
All the men from our village, I mean small town, were taken. There was even a lawyer who was in the First World War and had an Iron Cross. He said, you cannot do that to me, you know. He said, everybody went like everybody else. And they took him. We didn't know where my father was, all the other men. And they took away the telephone to call other people. And my mother told me to take the train and go to the bigger city where we had some family too. What's going on there? So I went there. I was 12 years old. And my aunt said, they're all in the prison here. So I ran to the prison, and sure enough, I saw my father and all the people from my for town, and everybody would tell my wife this and this. I ran back home and ran to each house and told them they in the next town. And the next morning, they went to the next town, and they were all gone. They were all shipped to Buchenwald.
You know what, Cheryl, we come back to, because I want to get a picture, an understanding of where the Nazis are at this point. Again, Hitler is in power, mm-hmm. but this is just before the war really kicks in. What power do the Nazis have at this point over the country, and what they're doing to the people in the country?
Okay. Well, the Nazis have created an atmosphere of fear and terror, and they did that. Remember that the first concentration camp is actually established in 1933, within a couple of months of Hitler taking power. And so people were being sent to those camps as a means of shutting down the opposition. So there's terror in the streets. The Gestapo is being used. People are informing on their neighbors. And in addition to all of the terror that's been created with respect to the Jews, there's this horrible smear campaign against the Jews, horrible propaganda, where Jews are painted as deviants. Jews are painted as unsavory characters, as all these typical anti-Jewish propaganda that you actually still see today sometimes.
One of the things I had read as well, and just, I mean, what I remember from history lessons is that after the Kristallnacht. One of the other things, too, is that Germany blamed it on the Jews.
Oh, sure.
And made them pay for it.
Yes. Well, that's a real story. There was a 17-year-old named Herschel Greenspan who was actually living in Paris at the time. And Herschel was getting news, he was seeing in the newspapers what was happening to the Jews in Germany, his own family included. And on November 3rd, he received a postcard from his sister, who was together with her family in Germany, who said, "We have been deported. They have taken everything from us. We're homeless. We're penniless. We didn't even have the time to go back, to run back and get things from the house. We don't know what to do." Actually, the family was sleeping in a horse stable that was still full of dung. And Herschel, being a 17-year-old who was very confused and really didn't know what to do, he went into a gun store. He bought a gun and took himself over to the German consulate in Paris, killed the first official that he could find. And so this became the pretext, because what Goebbels does, Goebbels was Hitler's propaganda minister, and he really knew how to work the press. What he did was he created a whole story where Greenspan was really a representative of the Jews, the worldwide Jewish conspiracy. The Jews were responsible. The Jews were fighting against Germany. Something has to be done against the Jews.
All right, Herbert. At what point did you, and I want to know how many of your family were able to escape Germany. At what point did you finally leave Germany?
We all escaped Germany. My father.
Your father, who had been arrested, he also...
The only way to get out of Buchenwald, you had to show that you leave Germany in the next 6 months. And we called, the only place that was open was Shanghai, China. I know I had four cousins went to China.
China?
Yeah. And my father came out because of the Chinese. But in the meantime, we found out that the Cuban consul in Germany, Hamburg, selling permits to go to Cuba. So since we want to come to the States, we bought permits to go to Cuba.
And that was the famous MS St. Louis that went to Cuba.
That's correct.
That was turned away by the Cubans. The U.S. turned you away. Canada turned you away.
Correct. Everybody. We sent telegram all over the country, the world, and nobody wanted us.
And then you ended up where? You had to come back to Europe.
We had to go back to Europe, but the captain was a wonderful person. And there were 300 families told the captain, "You weren't going to take us back to Germany. We're going to jump ship before we get to Germany." And when he heard that, he said, I won't take you back to Germany. I'm going to scuttle a ship in England and somebody has to rescue you."
Again, I'm talking to Herbert Karliner, and he was 13 years old living in Germany during the horrible night, Kristallnacht, which again started yesterday or starts tomorrow. And it was two nights where the Germans basically had come in and destroyed hundreds, more than 1,000 synagogues, shops, stores, businesses, arrested thousands of Jews. The number, the death toll was at 91, but some people claim it's even more than that. Mr. Karliner and his family escaped to Germany after that. I'm also speaking with Cheryl Ohrion. I'm going to get it right. She is head of the Echoes and Reflections. Again, that's a group with Yad Vashem that is teaching teachers how to teach the Holocaust, because it was so long ago, but we can't forget it. And one of the reasons that we can't forget it, and I want to ask you, and Herbert, I want to start with you, is the fact that recently in the news, we've seen white nationalists, white supremacists, not just the KKK, but neo-Nazis really rising up in this country. We're seeing the Nazi symbol. And I have to ask you what you think about the fact that here we are 80 years later, almost 80 years later, and you still see Nazis.
I cannot believe it. After what we went through, I go often to Paris because I have a lot of friends there. And I said to them, "Don't you see what's going on in Paris, in France?" He said, "Oh, there's nothing, you know." I said, "Yeah, we did the same thing in the 39, and if we don't believe that it's going to happen to us, and it's going to happen again if we don't pay attention."
Cheryl, what are your thoughts on the fact that decades later, we defeated the Nazis, we defeated Hitler,
right,
and you still see Nazism?
Sure, and this is something that we teach in Echoes and Reflections and also at Yad Vashem in Jerusalem. We teach that the Holocaust is a human story. So when you're talking about all kinds of human behavior, you're talking about choices that people make. People made the choice to go out and vandalize. There were people who made the choice to save or to rescue or to help. There were a lot of people, the majority of people, always, and this is something that repeats itself and repeats itself through the years, and we still see it. The majority always makes that choice to kind of stand to the side, be bystanders, put their hands in their pockets, say, it's not going to happen to me. But that's the importance of this whole thing, is to understand that, yes, history does repeat itself. Hate groups are still with us. It may not be the Jews. It may be the Jews. It may be a swastika. It may be another sign of hatred. But that's what we have to do something about. And by trying to emphasize choices that people make and values, that's what we're trying to get at when we teach about the Holocaust, human behavior.
All right. I want to come back, and I want to come back and talk to Herbert a little bit more about this horrible story, this sad story. But again, as you said, Herbert, you and your family did escape. But I want to discuss more about that that experience, again, about the Kristallnacht. Tomorrow is when it happened, almost 78, 79 years ago now. And again, talking about why we need to continue to educate and talk about the Holocaust so that we don't forget, as Cheryl just mentioned. More on this coming up on Sundial here on WLRN. Welcome back to Sundial here on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. I do want to mention, by the way, that my guest today, Herbert Karliner and Ms. Ojeon, they're going to be both speaking at a special event tomorrow in remembrance of Kristallnacht. It is Kristallnacht, the spark that ignited the Holocaust. That's Thursday, November 9th. It starts at 6 o'clock at the Holocaust Memorial, Miami Beach. Herbert, just real quickly, because you were telling me this story. So you had your family going to China. You tried to come to the United States and Cuba and Canada. Everybody turned you away. When you look back on what happened those couple of nights and everything that started to really just turn really dark in Germany in those years, I mean, what are some of the memories that stick with you that you share with people because you want them to know what happened?
Yes, absolutely. For example, I had an uncle in a different town, and he must have said something about Hitler. And he was arrested in 1938 or 37, I don't remember exactly. And he was taken to Dachau. And about a month later, the SS officer came with a little box and gave it to my aunt and said, "That's your husband." This was 1938 or 37, I don't remember exactly. So we know already what was going on in Germany.
During this time, you were still a young teenager. Did you understand what was going on? And, I mean, could you believe what was happening?
I saw what was going to happen because they wouldn't let us go to school anymore. I used to love to play soccer with all the other boys. And they said, "You hit, kick the ball." They kicked my feet. And when I came black and blue to see my mother, wouldn't let me play soccer anymore. So I felt terrible. And I don't know, as far as I remember, I always wanted to come to the States. I used to read books from Karl May. And he has a wonderful idea for the United States. And I always remember that,
Cheryl, one of the things I wanted to get to before I let you go is that, again, you're part of this group, Echoes and Reflections, and that you teach teachers how to teach the Holocaust. And I thought, wait a second, I mean, it's in the history books. How do you teach them to teach the Holocaust that we're not doing right?
History is really, again, it's a human story. It's a story about human behavior. And in this particular case, Kristallnacht, for instance, was the most widely reported incident that happened in this period from 1933 to 1945 because all of the foreign press was still there. But no one in the world said a word. Except for Roosevelt, it took him a week before he actually came out against this whole massive violence that happened in Germany on those two nights. What we're trying to teach here is not just the hard facts. We're trying to teach stories like Herb's story. We're trying to teach about the people that went through all this, and we're trying to teach the students that are learning this history how to make better choices, how to stand up for their morals, for their ethics, for their values, not to turn and look the other way when something like this is going on, how to make better choices that really, not to sound trite, but will make the world a better place.
I wondered if, do you think that's what happened, that people just turned and looked the other way, and that's why the Nazis were able to take power? Because I think, again, about what we see today, and I don't want to compare, but at the same time, I have to ask, what is it we're seeing today, and what are we supposed to make of it?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not going to talk politics because I don't do that, but what I will say is that we need to know, and students need to know, that when your core values are challenged, that's the time that you have to stand up and say something. That you can't just sit back and let this happen and be an observer. You have to take action. You have to do something. If you see a wrong, you have to right it.
Herbert, what is, if there's anything that, you know, you could share with the especially younger generations today that you want them to know and want them to think about your experiences and everything that happened during that era?
Well, I used to be a volunteer at Holocaust Memorial for 20 years. I talked to young people in schools and so on. I told them my experience, and I said, watch out if anti-Semitism comes and so on, because if you don't watch, it's going to get bigger and bigger, and you're going to suffer in life like I did, and you don't need us.
You know, I also, one of the other things too, Cheryl, is I think about the fact that we have this generation that is disappearing very quickly. And this generation, whatever part of the world they come from, have these stories to share. Have we done a good enough job getting these stories, gathering these stories and saving them?
Well, one of the things we do at Yad Vashem, and we also do through Echoes and Reflections, uses the USC Shoah Foundation testimonies. There are about 55,000 testimonies. 1,500 of them are online. We use testimonies as much as we can because they do tell these stories. So I'm sure we could still do a better job because we have to get these stories before they fade away completely. But there has been a great deal of work done to capture them.
Again, Herbert Karliner, an amazing, sad but amazing story. Again, he was just a teenager living in Germany near the Polish border, and his family experienced this heinous crime that was committed almost, again, 79 years ago. Kristallnacht took place, again, tomorrow, 79 years ago, where, again, almost 1,000 synagogues were burned. Hundreds, if not thousands, of stores were torn down, burnt down, destroyed. Again, thousands of Jews were arrested and put into concentration camps. He was able to escape. His family escaped. And he continues to share that story because we still need to hear it. I also want to thank so much for joining us today is Cheryl Ohion. Oh, I'm going to get it right. I apologize about that. I'm still practicing. She is head of the Echoes and Reflections, teaching teachers how to teach the Holocaust. It's part of the Yad Vashem program. Both of them, by the way, are going to be speaking again tomorrow night in remembrance of Kristallnacht. It is Kristallnacht, the spark that ignited the Holocaust. That's Thursday, November 9th, starting at 6:00 at the Holocaust Memorial, Miami Beach. We'll have information, by the way, online if you want to know more about that. Cheryl, Herbert, it's been an absolute pleasure. I really appreciate you coming in and sharing these stories with us.
Thanks.
All right. We'll have more coming up on Sundial here on WLRN.